My message today is entitled, Capitalism is a Spiritual and Global Crisis. See, there's an aberrant and oxymoronic relationship that is well and alive in the United States. It actually never should have been. It's a putrid and heartless combination. It's been laying out the path to suffering for quite a while now. It's been betraying the intention of the true American dream and stomping on those who struggle the most along the way. It's become so much the water that we swim in that few bother to notice, few bother to name it, and few bother to it. Christianity and capitalism. In Kevin Cruz's One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America, he presents a very carefully laid out history of Christianity's participation in the promotion of capitalism in the U.S. And he argues that Christianity's Puritan praise for work and thrift played a strong role into a support of a laissez-faire economics where hard work was rewarded with no regulations from the government. I suspect that he's right. Cruz goes on to posit that Christianity ultimately wrapped itself fully up in capitalism in the U.S. in the middle of about 20th century. He opens his book showing what once the widespread anti-capitalist outlook of most Americans. Not surprising, you see, after sort of the bleakness of the Great Depression, the average American harbored a strong mistrust of capitalists. After all, the greed, pride, and self and aggrandizement of wealthy capitalists is what got them to where they were. The U.S. was ripe with the soil for the installment of some form of democratic socialism where the playing field was more leveled and where core values of loving your neighbor and helping those in need, were more readily reflected. But knowing what we all know now, you should not be surprised to learn that many of America's wealthy began to worry about some form of a populist movement popping up and ruining the great gig that they had going so far. So they looked to their strongest resource, which of course is money, and did what capitalists do so well. They bought an answer to their problem. Now, in this case, the answer looked like a man by the name of Reverend James Fifield Jr., as a matter of fact, was a Congregationalist minister who in today's world would probably be thought of as a minister of the prosperity gospel. Basically, he was the Joel Osteen of his time. He made crazy amounts of money by basically telling wealthy Christians that their wealth was proof of their virtue. God was rewarding them. God helps them that helps themselves. Fife was instrumental in combining Christian thought with emerging economic growth. He started an organization called Spiritual Mobilization. He started it in order to take that message of the two together to a larger population than just his own wealthy congregation. The organization's goal was to destroy the growing Christian support any kind of a welfare state and instead promote a new perspective of Christian libertarianism, as odd as that sounds. As opinion writer Elizabeth Bruning of the New York Times put it, spiritual mobilization sought to influence ministers across the country. And with its bottomless money resources, it was doomed to success. Cruz's account is startling in part because just how vulgar the whole affair was. Christianity was rented out quite consciously to buttress the shambling narratives about the continued dominance of the moneyed class in a performance that even Karl Marx would have found blunt. She says, as the middle of the 20th century approached, spiritual mobilization circulated literature touting the righteousness of the libertarian Christian gospel, and in 1951, they decided to host a series of events celebrating the newly minted notion of freedom under God, a turn of phrase coined by Fifield himself. And the rhetoric was a hit. And private companies voraciously reproduced it. You know, I'd also add that it was just a few years later that we added, in God we trust to our paper money. You better believe that was not a coincidence. One last thought from, Elizabeth Bruning. She says, the stew of supply side economics, small government, hardcore U.S. patriotism, and Christian rhetoric was entirely novel at that point and smashingly effective. See, proponents of this newly constructed ideology were manifold, powerful, and well funded. Cruz names Billy Graham as the sort of spiritual inheritor to the efforts of Christian libertarians like Fifield. Graham's preaching, you know, was sensational and won the support of tycoons like Texas Oil and Sid Richardson, who helped launch Graham's career in Washington, D.C. Graham's ascent basically opened the way for other pastors with political aspirations like Jerry Falwell and his moral majority cohort to allow them to wax passionate about the gospel while they also raked in cash from committed capitalists designed by the arranged marriage of God and mammon. But here's the thing. There is nothing Christian, nothing spiritually satisfying, nothing morally upright about that sordid relationship. It is uncaring, it is unbiblical, it is inhumane, and it is killing creation. In his dictum entitled Evangelium, or the Joy of the Gospel, Pope Francis put it this way, quote, we can no longer trust the unseen forces and the invisible hand of the market. He then goes on to call for a redistribution of wealth and reform of economic structures that would ensure greater equality of income and the rich, he says, should share their wealth, and calls for a new commandment. Quote, today we also have to say, thou shalt not, to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Confucius put it this way. The superior man understands what is right. The inferior man understands what will sell. Sri Lankan economist practicing Buddhist Neville Tutelik once, a Buddhist economic system has its foundations in the development of cooperative and harmonious effort in group living. Selfishness and acquisitive pursuits have to be eliminated by developing man himself, or humanity itself. You know, the reality is, most, if not all, spiritual practices and teachings stand over and against systems that allow for a small group of people to hold the majority of wealth while the majority of the people suffer. We've certainly seen that reality. The reality of it as our government rushes to save the economy and not its people in the midst of this COVID-19 crisis. Sadly, though, as an Israeli historian, Yuval Noah Harari, says, the history of ethics is a sad tale of wonderful ideals that nobody can live up to. Most Christians did not imitate Christ. Most Buddhists failed to follow Buddha. Most Confucians would have cost Confucius a temper tantrum. In contrast, most people today successfully live up to the capitalist consumerist ideal. The new ethic promises paradise on the condition that the rich remain greedy, their time making more money, and that the masses give free rein to their cravings and passions and buy more and more. He says this is the first religion in history whose followers actually do what they are asked to do. How, though, he says, do we know that we'll really get paradise in return? We've seen it on television. Free market, unregulated capitalism is a crisis. It should be a surprise that we now print "In God We Trust" on our money, because it would seem that the money is the only God in which we truly trust. And sadly, it's a blind and false trust, for the capitalism it represents does not want the best for each of us, nor does it have the aspiration to improve our lives spiritually or otherwise. The capitalism that it represents, the power that it measures, the God that it emulates, wishes nothing more than to create a God class, a class of society to which the rest of us are to be subservient and must obey, a ruling class who can afford to live outside of the destruction and the ruin that they are creating, while the rest of us toil amidst the muck with the false belief that things will get better. Now, it's not some dystopian view of the future. That's an open-eye reading of the world's current reality. And there's nothing good or kind or loving or spiritual about it. You see, while free market capitalism has generated an incredible wealth for a tiny portion of the world's population, it's taken an already devastating toil on the planet, and it's failed to improve the well-being of the vast majority of humanity. If anything, it's done the opposite for most. See, we must remember that the primary issue at the heart of the crisis of climate change is the very way in which we produce things globally, and that is tied deeply into the core value of capitalism, which is profit over sustainability. As long as we choose to continue operating out of that myopic understanding of economics, the crisis will continue, and given its progressive nature, it's only going to get worse. In a recent paper just from last year, the UN's 2019 Global Sustainable Development Report, in it, scientists argue that worsening climate change is having a drastic impact on ecosystem biodiversity, and that symptoms of unchecked capitalism, like rising inequality, unemployment, and debt, are also contributing to the destabilization of society. In order to guarantee that humanity able to have a good quality of life on earth for future generations. But the paper's authors, the paper's scientists, argue that the new economic systems will have to be created rather than the standard band-aid approach that governments have taken in the recent past. To put it plainly, free market capitalism is at fault. Spiritually minded people, particularly those who say they are Christian, should be at the forefront of the effort to enact this necessary change. Without it, creation is all but lost. As I said, free market capitalism is a spiritual crisis. Does what we claim with the way our lives match what we say matters to us spiritually? Now, we don't ultimately need to beat ourselves up over that answer too badly because, well, the reality is that in today's world, particularly living under the constant impact of free market capitalism, in the U.S., any American, even being halfway honest with themselves, has to answer the question, no, not living out the fullness of their spiritual values. No matter how much we want to have our spiritual confessions match with our lives' actions, the only way to exist and participate in a consumer-oriented society is to not always live to our spiritual confessions and expectations, which is exactly why we must work for change. We must work for a society structured in a way that promotes our ability to care for all people, a society that enables us to lift up the founding concept that all are created equally and should be treated that way, a society that values sustainability, not just of resources, but humanity over profit. It's not that radical of an idea. Because of the way that our nation is structured, this will necessarily be a political pursuit. Like Christianity was used in the earliest stages of embedding capitalism into the U.S., we must use spirituality, morality, and our humanity to change the nation's economic practices towards the health, well-being, and the equal inclusion all people. It means becoming more active in the political process. It means being more vocal about systems that will sustain creation and life. It means being willing to engage in civil disobedience when unjust laws are promoted. It means actively divesting from stocks that promote division, mass consumption, and inequality. It means actively supporting companies who promote fair wages and civil rights. And it also means avoiding those who don't. This list, it could go on and on. There is no way that all of us can do all of them. But all of us can do some of them. The one thing we all can do, the one thing we must do, is vote. That is currently our real path to change. It begins locally and it extends nationally. That is where the change we need begins. It begins with an educated populace showing up at the polls and voting for sustainability, voting for the welfare of all people, voting for basic human rights, equality, and dignity. Voting for a system that values creation and all of humanity which depends on it. Amen.